paper 23, which is old, single column, page 256. And, you know, not only starting a new paper, but starting a new block of papers. You've got a block of six papers on spirit origin beings. Yeah, so we did the Supreme Spirits, we did the Trinity origin beings, we did the Sons of God, and the remainder, primary remainder, is the spirit origin beings. All right, and I think actually before we even read it in that first paragraph, let's just notice a common pattern. For those who are familiar with the book a little bit, when we did the Supreme Spirits, you remember, you know, there were seven Supreme Spirit groups. Do you remember how they handled those? They did it in two papers. One of those seven got their own paper. Which ones? Paper 16, the Master Spirits. Right? One of the, you know, they're one of the Supreme Spirits. So the way they did handled them is they gave that first group their own paper and then handled the rest of them. Well, we've got the same thing happening here now with the spirit origin beings. Now, if you look at the name of the next paper, you'll see it appears in this first paragraph, the higher personalities of the infinite spirit. You have different flavors of those higher personalities. Number one is the solitary messengers. So they're doing the exact same thing. They're to handle these higher personalities, you have two papers, and they're giving one of them their own paper up front. Just noticing that structural similarity should make you suspicious that there might be something afoot. You know, never underestimate what's going on. I mean, the revelators have utilized every means possible to suggest associations, patterns. They reveal directly to the extent that they're allowed, and then they suggest like crazy, you know, next. And if you aren't, you know, if you aren't thinking that the book has that level of construct, you know, that it's full of suggestion, that no one could ever write it that complicated, no, they can, and they have. And you want to be just looking for that. You know, it doesn't, you know, something like that, you know, doesn't guarantee. But obviously, since I'm mentioning it, you know it's gonna, you know, it's gonna happen. But you know, just the more you're familiar you are with the construct of the whole book, the more you'll start to see, you know, all these they're revealing truths even in the way they've laid out the papers, the order, and, you know, and everything. All right, so let's get going here.
Paper 23, the solitary messengers. Solitary messengers are the personal and universal cores of the
core
of the conjoint creator. They are the first and senior order of the higher personalities of the infinite spirit. They represent the initial creative action of the infinite spirit and solitary function for the purpose of bringing into existence solitary personality spirits. Neither the Father nor the Son directly participated in this stupendous spiritualization.
Okay. Now just see what all the little bit that they've said there. They're talking about they represent the initial creative action. You know, before you even read any further, you should be thinking, wait a minute, I've just read paper 16 recently. I thought the master spirits were the first ones that the third source and center was up to. Okay. But the rest says, the initial creative action of the infinite spirit in solitary function. What does that mean, solitary function? Yeah, you go, well, apparently it's what's said in the last sentence there. Neither the Father nor the Son directly participated. But, you know, they said that about the master spirits too. You know, so, you know, you would be immediately satisfied by this paragraph from an individuality viewpoint, sort of a seven absolutes of infinity viewpoint, by that last sentence, and you just keep chugging along. But if you have any memory of the beginning of paper 16, you're going, well, wait a minute. So what's the difference here between the solitary message and the master spirit? Okay, it's not the Father, Son. It has nothing to do with Father and the Son. In either case, what's the difference? In one case, he's solitary, and in the other case, he isn't. And there's the word function, which is also a key. But when I didn't go into it deeply, because to get into the details, you know, involves what comes out of unpacking the patterns in the central universe. But I pointed out that there's a fundamental association between the infinite spirit, the third source and center, as the infinite spirit. You know, not the conjoint actor necessarily, or other things, other designations, but just that non-personal, you know, or maybe you should say impersonal, expression of the third source and center is the infinite spirit and another facet of deity, the Paradise Trinity. Okay? The master spirits come out of a creative cycle of a relationship between the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity. There's this duality that leads, it begins with the master spirits and ends with the circuit spirits. Remember, that was another one of those supreme spirits. There's a whole creative cycle that involves directly that relationship. And the first thing that comes out of that non-solitary functioning is the master spirits. The first beings that come out of the solitary function, in other words, not in association with the Paradise Trinity, is the solitary messengers. It's like, okay, well, fundamentally, why is there this definitive linkage between the third source and center as the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity in the first place? Well, the Paradise Trinity is the origin, is the side of the original that originates the mother. Now, the full aspect of what's in play is the infinite mother spirit. So that mother deity that's in the infinite mother spirit has this very immediate connection to the Paradise Trinity. That's why they're so linked. So now what are they saying then? So if the infinite spirit is not functioning in that intimate association with the Paradise Trinity, it's just as the infinite spirit, not really as the infinite mother spirit. In other words, it's just as existential deity, not with that experiential deity combined in, not with that deity that allows the infinite spirit to have a much more intimate engagement down in the universe. It's just that God is transcendence fact, much more of that. So when they say he's functioning just basically as that existential deity aspect and giving rise to these beings, that's going to immediately imply that these beings are not going to be projected very far down in, because it's not in relationship with the mother part of the infinite mother spirit that can allow it. You know, that hierarchical, you know, vertical hierarchical aspect of the mother that would allow the infinite mother spirit to project something way down in, like a supernathim. You know, it's right down in there and in the trenches. Okay, so you shouldn't be surprised if we start reading some more and they start describing a being who's quite transcendental, has a very limited relationship with the finite space and time, because it's the solitary function. And the word function is really stressing deity, you know, being what's going on, rather than so much thinking of it in terms of you know, an individual. I mean, it's not going to really hurt too much in this case to think of it in individuality form. I mean, the infinite spirit name is an individuality name in the first place, but they're really reminding you that, you know, this is in this is sort of the immediate corollary of that very deity-to-deity relationship between the Infinite Mother Spirit and the Paradise Trinity. Because the Paradise Trinity is just deity, not God at all. So there can't be a God relationship. And so it's in that functioning relationship of deity that you have this immediate corollary. Okay, so that's what's going on. And we'll see, if you've gotten to the point where you've unpacked that level of stuff and recognize they're alluding to that in the first paragraph, there's a number of things that follow that you can recognize that they're alluding to and wanting you to put the pieces together. All right, so let's get some more.
These spirit messengers were personalized in a single creative episode, and their number is stationary. Although I have one of these extraordinary beings associated with me on this present mission, I do not know how many such personalities exist in the universe of universes. I only know from time to time how many are of registry record as functioning for the time being within the jurisdiction of our super universe. From the last Uversa report, I observe that there were almost 7,690 trillion solitary messengers then operating within the boundaries of Orvontan, and I conjecture that this is considerably less than 1/7 of their total number.
Okay, so, saying that, especially in the wake of what we've been reading in the previous paper, where over and over each being was, here's how many are in Orvontan, and that's exactly 1/7. So you see the significance of that immediate contrast to the previous paper. So you have at the bare minimum something on the order of 50 quadrillion, okay, just to be out and about. But, how many there are beyond that, he says, I conjecture that is considerably less. Yeah, so, you decide what considerably means. Do you want it to be 1% or whatever? There's a huge number of them. And, just maybe the one thing to note, you've got all these, first-person pronouns here, I this, I that, okay? So you think, so they've got this really intimate, telling each other all about themselves sort of relationship going on. But what's up with that? I do not know how many such personalities exist in the universe of universes. Well, you have this intimate personal relationship you're describing here. Why haven't you just asked? The solitary messengers must know.
Divine counselor, huh?
Yeah, and then it's a divine counselor that's, authoring this paper. So it's not like the solitary messenger is like, I would tell if someone who is, higher ranked, but you're too low on the totem pole. That's not what's going on. You're up against, again, this thing we see so much where it doesn't matter if you're a divine counselor and you have a mind that's beyond anything we can imagine and, you're trillions and trillions and trillions of years old and a lot, you don't get to know some things. Apparently, the solitary messengers have been told to not disclose that. And that's that. It's on a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know.
Why are some of them of record and some are not?
Well, again, see, there's just, you've got ones that are assigned to tasks in a super universe, and they have to, register at the headquarters when they come into the super universe. So you have them in a list, how many are functioning right now. The ancients of the days want to keep track of how many of them are functioning in their super universe. And when they're done with their task, they're scratched off the record and they go on to some other thing. Right, so,
I wonder how that compares to how many ascended mortals there are. Did you ever figure that one out?
Well, if you remember when we were talking about the Isle of Paradise and they were describing how many residences there were for finaliters, it was you were getting to numbers where you have to be in the esoteric know to even know what names to give to such huge numbers. Okay, it's way beyond quadrillions. Okay, Yeah, these huge, huge numbers, okay? But you'll see that there is a relevance that comes into play later on. It won't be tonight, but you know, when we get to the latter part of the paper, you know, to that question of how, what's the comparison between what's going on with ascending mortals and this number.
One, nature and origin of solitary messengers. Immediately following the creation of the seven spirits of the Havona circuits, the infinite spirit brought into being the vast corps of solitary messengers. There is no part of the universal creation which is pre-existent to the solitary messengers except paradise and the Havona circuits. They have functioned throughout the grand universe from near eternity. They are fundamental to the divine technique of the infinite spirit for self-revelation to and personal contact with the far-flung creations of time and space.
All right. Just notice you're right at the beginning there. I already gave you a heads up on that, so you already appreciate the significance. See, immediately following the creation of the seven spirits of the Havana circuit. So, like I said, that creative cycle about that coupling between the Paradise Train and the Infinite Spirit, it culminates in bringing the circuit spirits into existence. See, and then immediately following that is these corollary phenomena of solitary function. Okay? So that's where it fits in, and that's all, you know, right there at the beginning of what you we would call time. You know, right there at the starting point of the post purely Havona or post fairly central universe, I should say, you know, age.
So,
right. Yep.
So when you get down to the fundamental to the divine technique of the infinite spirit for self-revelation.
Right.
Popped up in my mind that maybe this is kind of like the infinite spirit's thought adjusters in a way.
Or only flipped. Because here, you know, in the case, you have the universal father is a person, the thought adjusters are not persons. Here, like we're pointing out, the, you know, the conjoint actor, that's the third source and center, you know, the personal face. The infinite spirit is the impersonal face.
The mind.
But the solitary messenger, yeah, the mind bestower, and yeah, but it's, you know, it's the impersonal face. But if you'd like to see a really pure expression of what that impersonal face looks like personalized, look at a solitary messenger. See, so it is a similar, see, flipped in personal identification. You know, and that, you know that's going to come up, this close association between thought adjusters and solitary messengers. Right? See, so you can see how there's a parallelism here. With this interesting little reciprocation of personality flipped in. So that's what's what the significance there is. Or even, as you'll see, they'll bring it in. Don't forget that you have these very definitive impersonal downstepped expressions of the infinite spirit, the creative spirits, you know, before they're the creative mother spirits, but just that creative spirit part, that impersonal part, they give personal face to that impersonal local universe-sized expression, downstepped expression of the infinite spirit. Now, once the creative mother spirit is very, you know, quite definitively personal post the creator son becoming a master son in that local universe, does she need the solitary messengers to kind of be a personal face for her, because she's more of a her instead of an it. Yeah. So, very much. These are little windows on what it looks like to personalize that normally impersonal expression of the third source and center. Yeah.
When you were talking about the infinite spirit's relationship to the Trinity, maybe I've missed this somewhere, but I'm puzzled. How does the infinite spirit relate to the Trinity, which the infinite spirit is already a part?
No, so you got to remember that. You know, we're not, the Trinity is not the Trinity of Christendom.
Beg pardon?
The Paradise Trinity is not the Trinity of Christendom, of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
It's
not what I'm thinking of that.
But fundamentally, you know, in the Urantia book, they say, you know, that thing that you've talked about in Christianity, you know, or that was revealed to you going way back, where you think about the three persons working together, that's called the first triunity in here. The Paradise Trinity is not the first triunity. The Paradise Trinity is a different fact. It's a fourth fact. It can have a relationship with the third source and center, with the second source and center, with the first source and center, because it's not one of the three or the association of the three. It's a fourth thing. It has a relationship to the third source and center like you do, as a separate fact. That's what we're talking about. You know, that's one of the most fundamental elements of the fifth epical revelation. It's the point at which you break free from the history of thought about God and deity. It is the fundamental starting point of the fifth epical revelation. The first section in the foreword is not God. It's deity. Okay? And those three persons are gods. And the association of three is the association of three gods. The Paradise Trinity is not God or an association of gods. It's not God at all. It's deity. It's something more fundamental than God. God is personalized deity. It's deity that you can identify personality with. The Paradise Trinity is non-personalizable deity. It's a facet of deity, and it functions, it does everything you can imagine, a profound fact like it must be doing, but it's not a person.
Okay? You don't worship it.
You don't worship it, but you will develop a great reverence for it because it is the foundation upon which you stand. It's from the Paradise Trinity comes, you know, where we are, and this immanence that's with us. From the Father comes this transcendental thing that, you know, we're never going to transcend, you know, that some sort of an absolute level to be able to come face to face with those infinite persons in their transcendent of everything domain. The best we can hope to get to is co-absoluteness, but even absoluteness won't get you there. You got to get up to co-infinite stuff. And you get to really be face to face with them. They are transcendent of every kind of inside you can think of, even the kind of inside that the cosmos infinite is. They're even outside of that. Okay? They're not only outside of the grand universe, not only outside of the master universe, they're outside of the cosmos infinite. They are outside, and you can't get to them. But the Paradise Trinity is the key. Right? And so just emphasizing that again, that's the big step you've got to make to get into the revelation, is to recognize that I have four fingers that I need to hold up and give names to. Universal Father, the Eternal Son, the Infinite Spirit, and the Paradise Trinity.
Then they throw the Supreme in later on.
Yeah, well, no, there's all the other stuff too. But in terms of that existential stuff, you know, not bringing in God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, or God the Absolute, but just existential. There's these four existential facts, four existential individualities. Three are persons, one is not. But it's just as much a self as these three selves. It's a full-on infinite self, but it's not personalized. You know, and an infinite self can do a lot of things. Think about how much assertion your self has, how much incessant clamoring your little self has. Think how much incessant clamoring an infinite self has, how much it's up to all the time. Okay, that's the Paradise Trinity.
Yeah. What was that? Better self-control.
Yeah, right. It has infinite self-control to go with that, right.
Yeah.
But still, you know, it's not like self-control means you stop the motion of that incessant clamoring self. You just direct it in positive avenues. You know, if anything, once you start getting it more properly directed, you amp up the the degree of motion. You know, you get it moving faster and faster and with bigger and bigger volume until it's the fire hose of truth.
So yep. Back to the forward.
Right. Yep.
I have to go.
Yep.
What was your question again?
No, just about the Paradise Trinity. Yeah. Right. So.
Thank you.
All right. So let's see. Did we talk about everything there? Let's see. We were on. Did we just do the first paragraph?
Notwithstanding.
We're ready to there. Okay. Let's see. So yeah. Okay. So we talked about the circuit spirits.
Right.
And let's see. Let's see, yeah, you know, they function throughout the grander universe from near eternity. You know, that's a really key term, and you see when they use that near eternity term. So in other words, right there, the first thing after the eternity-ness of the, nothing but the Isle of Paradise in the central universe. Your first step out. Okay, so yeah, let's get some more here.
Notwithstanding that these messengers are existent from the near times of eternity, they are all aware of a beginning of selfhood. They are conscious of time, being the first of the creation of the infinite spirit to possess such a time consciousness. They are the firstborn creatures of the infinite spirit to be personalized in time and spiritualized in space.
Okay, now that should be getting you thinking about another thing.
How much I don't understand.
Near times of eternity. Now, they repeated it. It's like, are you remembering something they're saying? When did we talk about that before? And you're thinking about it. It's like, well, wait a minute. It sounds like they're saying that these are the first finite creatures. Or no more than that, it doesn't say just creatures. They're the first beings, okay? See, it says they are conscious of time being the first, you know, of the creation, it just says, you know. It's like, it doesn't necessarily mean creatures. So it's saying that there's these first beings. Now, they do say they are the firstborn creatures after that, okay? Where did we talk about this before, this whole notion of being the first beings on the finite personality record?
The ancients of days.
From the near times of eternity. That's why they're called ancients. Oh, wait a minute. The ancients of days are what? Origin.
Trinity
origin. So I've got the two, the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity working together. They go through that creative cycle, which culminates in the circuit spirits, like they just said. And then immediately after that, those two do their first acts of bringing some being into existence on their own. And we even know the order. Because the first ones on the finite personality record are the ancients of days. It says that point blank. This is just the first ones that the infinite spirit did. So first the Paradise Trinity made the ancients of days, and the parallel, the reciprocal, you know, is the infinite spirit making the solitary messengers. The ancients of days and the solitary messengers have a parallel to them. They're the first two things subsequent to the bringing the circuit spirits and all the stuff that's involved in that into existence. Ancients of days, the solitary messengers. And so they're one and two in that record of creatures who actually, you know, have a direct originating relationship with the finite. They're originated via the finite, whereas a transcendentaler, you know, especially the ones that are lower, you know, have a relationship to the finite, like the associate transcendental master force organizers. You know, they have to have some definitive relationship if they're going to make the first finite individuations of energy, the automatons. Okay, they have a relationship to the finite, but they didn't originate via the finite. They originated totally up in the absonite. These are the first creatures that are being originated, you know, sort of off the touchstone of the finite. Okay, one group, the 21 ancients of days by the Paradise Trinity, and then these almost countless number of solitary messengers from the infinite spirit. And that's that sets it right up, the pattern they told you, before. When you're talking about the personalities of the infinite spirit, you're talking about something that's completely beyond your imagination in numbers. Just the number of flavors is beyond your imagination, let alone the number of individuals. Okay? So you see 21 compared to, you know, who knows how many quadrillion, quintillion or something. Okay? That's the kind of ratio that goes on. So, you know, just think of the handful of individuals that you can easily count and talk about that are tied to the Father and the Son and the Trinity even, and then what the infinite spirit does in response to all that. This incredible all-are-like, you know, proliferation of individuals. Because it's, you know, when you talk about the all-are getting to that, you know, end point in the mother, you have the infinite mother spirit. You know, this is a co-infinite upholder, the highest mother of them all, you know. See, so it's in that vast, you know, her arms reach around the whole phenomenon as a mother. So every, you know, her totality attitude is crazy, huge, okay? Just, you know, mind-bogglingly huge. She just can't think in small terms. All right, so that's what's going on. Let's get some more. Or do you have a... No, okay. Go on here.
These solitary spirits came forth in the dawn of time as full-fledged and perfectly endowed spirit beings. They are all equal, and there are no classes or subdivisions founded on personal variation. Their classifications are based wholly on the type of work to which they are assigned from time to time.
Okay, so here's another counter to a number of the beings that we've seen, where, you know, sometimes the self distinguishes, sometimes the personality distinguishes, sometimes both. Here they're saying it's all right. I mean, they're just very much one size fits all. Okay? Even their absolutely unique personalities, just it's really irrelevant. Okay? And speaking of that personality, notice at the end of that previous one, that kind of fun way they described them coming into existence, they are the firstborn creatures of the infinite spirit to be personalized in time and spiritualized in space.
Yeah, that's weird.
Why? I mean, why isn't it spiritualized in time and personalized in space? And why is it that way? Can you think of anything? You know, when you talk about time, you're talking about sequence. You know, time is the chronicity of motion. Remember when they talked about time, how you can have...
Personality has an innate relationship to time.
And to sequence, right. I mean, you know, as you go up from just the material, little t in a physics equation, that material sequence, you have progressing, the ing part, the sequence part, the progressing mind. You have perfecting spirit, and that third level above of time, harmonizing personality. See, personality can strike step with a sequence. Okay, see, it's a personalized in time. Even, you know, say they use the designation selfhood, just to remind you of, you know, not just self, but the selfhood, the ongoing fact. See, and then spiritualized in space. See, they're saying, so the substance for their body is given extent. Well, in relation to what? In relationship to finite space. They're projected into a certain volume of space as a spirit being. Personalized in time, spiritualized in space. Not spiritualized in transcendent space. In our space. Okay, so that's what's behind that. So see, they're very much brought into existence as a finite fact, grounded in the finite. All right?
Mortals start out as well-nigh material beings on the worlds of space and ascend inward towards the great centers. These solitary spirits start out at the center of all things and crave assignment to the remote creations, even to the individual worlds of the outermost local universes and even on beyond.
Yeah, keep going.
Oh. Though denominated solitary messengers, they are not lonesome spirits, for they truly like to work alone. They are the only beings in all creation who can and do enjoy a solitary existence, albeit they equally enjoy association with the very few orders of universe intelligence with whom they can fraternize.
It's a small club.
All right. So they are the only beings in all creation who can and do enjoy a solitary existence. Can you think about the contrasting fact? It should remind you of a sentence that we say at the beginning of every study group. This distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other, except in relation to the whole, the Fairless Trinity, and through the individuality of the whole, the Mother. These are solitary. They're not connected with others as a foundational fact through the individuality of the whole. Like we said, you know, this is separate from the Paradise Trinity, so more as just the infinite spirit, not the infinite mother spirit. So immediately not, the nature of their life, this distinction is vital. See, flip it around. We're always talking about it from our perspective and the mother. Why are they solitary? Because it's just that transcendental, that existential deity, the infinite spirit, without that intimate, immediate, by originating nature relationship to the mother, the individuality of the whole. So they're not by nature connected to others. They're solitary.
They can't even get close to each other.
Right, there's things like that. Now, if you've read this already, you know that they can get close to others. But we're just right here, we're just talking about, see, the nature and origin. Just, you know, not getting into really when they start doing things and qualifying this, but just that basic foundational nature is aloof because it's not directly related to the whole. I mean, that's why they travel almost at infinite speed. They don't really have much relationship to the whole. Mm-hmm. See? They're pretty much transcendent of it. And see, and the other side of that, and through the individuality, they don't really have that immediate linkage as a person, as all persons do, to other persons through the mother.
It says they're the only beings who can and do enjoy a solitary existence. Well, I don't mind a solitary existence.
Right, but...
Yeah, you're right, I'm just...
Yeah, but,
when did that happen? Every time.
All right, that'll get us off on a tangent. But just notice, you know, the only being. So this whole bit about this distinction is vital. In terms of what has been revealed to us, you know, I mean, there's really only one exception to that. These individuals, these solitary messengers, aren't persons that are really grounded down in the cosmos and linked to other persons in this very fundamental way through the individuality of the whole. They're this distinct exception to that, that oft-read sentence or oft-quoted sentence. That's why they're solitary. Okay. They're the flip of that sentence.
How then do they have relationships?
Okay, well, we'll get to that when we start talking about it a little bit. Yeah.
Once, twice a year.
Solitary messengers are not isolated in their service. They are constantly in touch with the wealth of the intellect of all creation as they are capable of listening in on all the broadcast of the realms of their sojourn.
Sounds like the NSA.
They can also intercommunicate with members of their own immediate core, those beings doing the same kind of work in the same super universe. They could communicate with others of their number, but they have been directed by the Council of the Seven Master Spirits not to do so, and they are a loyal group. They do not disobey or default. There is no record that a solitary messenger ever stumbled into darkness.
Okay, you can see they're already beginning to hint to this. There is some connectivity going on, and they're not absolutely isolated, but that's not surprising. They're not absolute creatures, okay? We'll get to the... We won't open up that can of worms yet, but just the thing to notice here is, okay, they have a lot of ability to know things, but look at this. They could communicate with others of their number, but they have been directed by the Council of the Seven Master Spirits not to do so. Why? Can you answer the question why?
I thought that was a can of worms you were talking about.
No. We're gonna answer that. I mean, why? Because, okay, we're talking about beings. Just think about what we know about them already. We're talking about beings that are very transcendent in a number of ways. Yes, they have this solid relationship to the finite, so solid that it can actually be a person, even though they're as tenuous as they are. A lot of what they are is very transcendent of what's immediately going on here. And that's why they're almost not directly related when they travel to space and time. They almost go at infinite speed. So if they were allowed to just fully manifest their nature, this very transcendent nature, into the finite, what would that do to the evolution of the finite? It would short-circuit it. And, of course, you know that sentence is coming up even.
Yeah.
See? Presage it right here. Right. They're allowed to intercommunicate with those that are working on, that's the kind of task that they're working on, but not, they can't connect one task to another. That will short-circuit the evolutionary process. Those two tasks... In this transcendent way, have to be kept separated so that all of the complications of that working out within the finite over trillions of years can happen without it being short-circuited. Now, if they were to do this, they would be doing exactly the same thing that Lucifer is trying to do. They would be in rebellion, trying to short-circuit the evolutionary process, trying to connect point A to point B, transcendent of the evolutionary process by trying to do it by fiat.
Because they have that ability.
And they could do it so trivially because they literally, you know, just totally go above and beyond all of the things that divide them down here, and they could connect them together.
Yeah. Yeah. There's got to be some discipline there.
Right. So
they think of the
prime directive. Yeah, right. So they're not allowed to short-circuit the evolutionary process. And immediately you see how close we are to the seven master spirits all the way through that cycle to the circuit spirits. You know, they're the ones that are giving them this. Yeah, so they're very, just like the ancients of days are really tightly tied to the master spirits, so are the solitary messengers here. Because they're the immediate things consequent to the master spirits.
Do they operate in a moment?
See, that's category number two. They operate everywhere. Yep. Yeah, including all the way out to the fourth outer space level. Yeah.
The
all right.
Solitary messengers, like the universe power directors, are among the very few types of beings operating throughout the realms who are exempt from apprehension or detention by the tribunals of time and space. They could be cited to appear before no one except the seven master spirits. But not in all the annals of the Master Universe has this Paradise Council ever been called upon to adjudicate the case of a solitary messenger.
All right, so just like all the power beings, you know, that's the category name for the Supreme Power Directors, the Supreme Power Centers, the Master Physical Controllers, Nemarancha Power Supervisors, all those power beings, the Universe Power Directors. Okay, and so often when we're talking about rebellion and stuff, We remind ourselves, oh, don't forget, you've got master physical controllers and, you know, they never join a rebellion. They're, you know, they're uncorruptible. You know, and so they're always in play in those rebellions or defaults, making sure that the things that, you know, need to be are.
Yeah.
In their
so
sphere
the
of function.
Relay wasn't really stuck.
But just, yeah. So solitary messengers have this you know, and with a lot of the power beings, you know, a lot of master physical controllers aren't even persons, so it's not amazing that they would be incorruptible. You know, they're like machines. But they're reminding you that even all the persons, there's this whole raft of persons from the infinite spirit. Remember, they come from the infinite spirit too. You know, that are just rock solid, uncorruptible.
Now, does that mean they're transcendent of moral considerations or have no relationship to moral?
No, they're a full on person. You know, it's just that they're perfect. They perfectly choose every choice. And why? Because they see the big picture. Yeah, I mean, every issue that is complicated to lesser beings is a duh to them. I mean, it's trivial for them to see what the right thing to do is. They have such a high vantage point, it's just, you know, right there. You know, for us, when we're down here in the trenches trying to, you know, look through the muck, you know, it's very hard at times to figure, well, I don't know what's right and what's wrong here. Yeah, but you get up any vantage point.
Do you think it's acceptable to think of them as a super intelligence core?
They are certainly, yeah, they are certainly part of that, you can see.
When they talk about all this listening in.
Right, like the comment there, you know, these days you can't help but think of the NSA, yes. Yeah, but, you know, remember, it's not just them. I mean, there's countless numbers of beings that listen to everything. You know, we've talked about that over and over. There are no secrets. Yeah.
These messengers of solitary assignment are a dependable, self-reliant, versatile, thoroughly spiritual, and broadly sympathetic group of created beings derived from the third source and center. They operate by the authority of the infinite spirit resident on the central isle of paradise, and as personalized on the headquarters spheres of the local universes. They are constant partakers of the direct circuit emanating from the infinite spirit. Even when they function in the local creations under the immediate influence of the local universe mother spirits.
Okay, a couple things there. When they say they operate by the authority of the infinite spirit resident on the central isle of paradise and as personalized on the headquarters spheres of the local universes. That and as, what are they talking about there?
Mother spirits.
Right, the mother spirits, right. And the mother spirits, creative mother spirits. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, when you say personalized, that's the mother part, but, you know, the immediate, you know, just unbroken expression of the infinite spirit down in the local universe level is as a creative spirit. You know, so that's the foundationally what they're referring to there. You have a creative spirit that's as if the infinite spirit is present. And with those creative mother spirits, or even with the universe presence of the infinite spirit, we talk about that as a spirit-mind presence. Okay? Mind is the foundation, spirit added to it. Notice how what they're giving you a little way of thinking about this transcendent nature that they have. They're much more up at this in the spirit part, not really normally getting down into that mindal foundation part. Right? They're skimming along the ceiling of everything. Not really, you know, mind is a very overt expression of that God within thing, as opposed to God as transcendence. So that, you know, that's another way of thinking about what they're encircled in that spirit part, but not so much in the mind part. In other words, not so much in the circuit of spirit hyphen mind, but just the spirit part. Not so much encircled in the infinite mother spirit, just the infinite spirit. It's all the same thing. Okay, so that's another way of seeing how they're transcendent. They ride along that spirit ceiling of the mind. All right?
There is a technical reason why these solitary messengers must travel and work alone. For short periods and when stationary, they can collaborate in a group. But when thus assembled, they are altogether cut off from the sustenance and direction of their paradise circuit. They are wholly isolated. When in transit or when operating in the circuits of space and the currents of time, if two or more of this order are in close proximity, both or all are thrown out of liaison with the higher circulating forces. They are short-circuited, as you might describe it, in illustrative symbols. Therefore, they have inherent within them a power of automatic alarm, a warning signal, which unerringly operates to apprise them of approaching conflicts and unfailingly keeps them sufficiently separated as not to interfere with their proper and effective functioning. They also possess inherent and automatic powers which detect and indicate the proximity of both the inspired Trinity spirits and the divine thought adjusters.
So we already talked about that obvious parallel between the Father and the thought adjusters. You know, and they're reminding you there's this other thing with the Trinity and the inspired Trinity spirits. That's another pair that is in this. So there's kind of three pairs like this that have this really mysterious, in many ways, transcendent thing going on. And they're aware of each other because of their common transcendence. They're sort of at eye level, see, those three relationships.
Yeah. And when, you know, I remember from, because they wrote the Juster papers, too,
right.
So
right.
When they talk about it, when they talk about, you know, I can sense that
right.
He even talks about that sense.
Yep, exactly, yep. And so now they're giving you a little bit, they're invoking, it's like, well, okay, we know they do things, so how does that work? For short periods, and when stationary, so they sort of drop out of this transcendent domain, which, you know, the more transcendent you are, the more it's going to seem like you're just in constant motion. Like if you're fully transcendent, you're going at infinite speed, and boy, is that in constant motion. Okay, so they're dropping down out of this very transcendent and very in motion phenomenon from our perspective. And engaging. So they drop down into that more mindal and link through the individuality of the whole. One personalized mind to another personalized mind, one personalized self to another personalized self through the individuality of the whole. But when to drop down like that, they unplug from what really is powering them, that spirit level. So they can unplug themselves and get down there and engage. Okay, but again, really more to your question, well, why can they do that? Well, we can talk about that it's not really so much the infinite mother spirit, but just the infinite spirit that gave origin to them. But it's not like the infinite spirit is a thing over here and the infinite mother spirit is another thing over here. It's one and the same thing. So even though it's really just the infinite spirit face of that fact that gives origin to them, you know, there's a fullness to that fact. There is a relationship back door, sort of, to the mother. See, and so that's what they do. They, you know, they come in the back door, you know, and then they have a mother relationship and they can interact as a person to another person. But when they go back up, you know, then when they're plugged back in, from our perspective, they come unplugged from the individuality of the whole. We're all plugged into each other.
So the one participating in the revelation unplugged to be
right. Right, yeah. Unplugged to drop down and write the adjuster papers.
And he right. Is right near me, whatever you said a few minutes ago.
Right, exactly. So just notice how, you know, once you have that, this distinction is vital sentence, and you just think about there's two ways of that. There's the normal mode that we invoke that sentence, and they're the exception. They're the ones that, to do that, this distinction is vital thing, they have to sort of cease to be what they're naturally, what they are originally. But now that might invoke, it's like, well now, you suppose that's a foretaste of their future. They began very transcendent, but maybe they're going to be coming down in more and more. And of course, the more they come down in and have a natural relationship down in, the less they can serve as these incredibly fast messengers, You know, see, this might say, when you get to the absentite age, you get to the next universe age, you know, maybe what you're seeing is the beginnings of them dropping down from the ceiling and coming down more in.
Would make sense, yeah. Because yeah. They could partake of the information they have. Yeah. They wouldn't be, you know, ruining evolution because evolution
But we've gotten up to the level, where they're not short-circuiting. And remember, we've already read about the inspired Trinity spirits. What do the revelators think is probably going to happen? As those solitary messengers really come down and in, the inspired Trinity spirits are going to take over this ceiling-dwelling, you know, transcendent connection of what's going on in the absentite age. They'll be the solitary messengers of the absentite age.
Post-finite. Post-finite is down isn't that down.
Right, exactly, right. Yeah, down comes down. Up, and yeah.
Down is up.
Yeah, right. So that's all this, that's what's going on there. That's, so in order to engage us, like we aspire to be able to finally interact person to person, this thing where, you know, this challenge that's been put to us to become so incredibly personally connected one to person to another, you know, that's like straitjacket painful for them. Right. You know, their whole inner dynamics stops. They come unplugged and,
It's like cleaving Adam and Eve apart.
So there's so many things that are kind of reciprocal about them. I'm stressing this a lot because you can help to understand yourself better by thinking about the contrast that they are. You know, that we're sort of reciprocal sides of the same thing.
These messengers possess no power of personality extension or reproduction, but there is practically no work of the universes in which they cannot engage and to which they cannot contribute something essential and helpful. Especially are they the great time savers for those who are concerned in the administration of universe affairs, and that they assist us all from the highest to the lowest.
Yeah, and we'll get into that as we keep going here. Let's just keep chugging.
Two, assignments of solitary messengers. Solitary messengers are not permanently attached to any individual or group of celestial personalities. They are on duty, always by assignment. And during such service, they work under the immediate supervision of those who direct the realms of their attachment. Among themselves, they have neither organization nor government of any kind. They are solitary messengers.
They are solitary messengers.
Solitary.
Yeah. So in other words, it's a duh, okay? Right. Yeah. What does, you know, organization or government mean when you have a bunch of island universes? That's a nonsensical thought. Right. But of course, what's the flip of that? The more you choose to be an island universe, the more you choose to absolutize your immature self and cut yourself off, don't expect much of that brotherhood of man. Don't even expect to be able to come up with some organization or government that even functions. You know, try to set up a club or something and see if it works. Not going to work if you're a bunch of island universes, if you're like a bunch of solitary messengers.
So are they so transcendent, so to speak, that the guy, the messenger that worked on this didn't even have to be told to do it? Is there somebody who is his boss, so to speak, in your way?
When the solitary messenger got assigned to that revelatory commission
by
the Ancients of Days.
Okay.
Right. There's that immediate boss that's sort of getting him into the Ancients of Days, but then the revelatory commission is in charge of handling it and doling out tasks even I could have figured that one out. I wonder who should write the adjuster papers. Let's see. That's a pretty easy one to assign.
Solitary messengers are assigned by the Infinite Spirit to the following seven divisions of service. One, messengers of the Paradise Trinity. Two, messengers of the Havona Circuits. Three, messengers of the super universes. Four, messengers of the local universes. Five, explorers of undirected assignment. Six, ambassadors and emissaries of special assignment. 7, revelators of truth. These spirit messengers are in every sense interchangeable from one type of service to another. Such transfers are constantly taking place. There are no separate orders of solitary messengers. They are spiritually alike and in every sense equal. While they are generally designated by number, they are known to the infinite spirit by personal names. They are known to the rest of us by the name or number designative of their current assignment.
Right. Notice they're stressing this again. So, and this bit about being alike and interchangeable. I mean, even if you don't resort to some understanding of their fundamental nature, just the fact that you know they're so transcendent, the differences that they might have are just not going to manifest in their functioning down here in the lowly cosmos. I mean, their differences are totally transcendent of any shadow that is cast down here in terms of their activities. It's just not going to manifest. I mean, if so, if for no other reason, that's why they're so alike.
They experience
and all this, you know, they're persons and all this sort of stuff. But she just remind, you know, all we're really going to talk about is their activities in the finite. And in many ways, their nature is very transcendent of that. So don't expect to see a lot of stark difference between them. You know, now in the next universe age, okay, maybe you'll start to, you know, see some difference because you'll get more up to their foundational level. But, you know, in this time, you know, it's a lot like the creative mother spirits in a particular super universe. They all are flavored by one master spirit, you know, and so they have a commonality and an interchangeability in that way, too. You know, there are a number of beings where their real distinctiveness is just not of this age. You're going to have to get to the next age before you're going to really start to see them differentiate themselves one from another, because they just can't do it down in these, you know, mother spirits are coming down from above, you know. They start out so transcendent of the finite that they don't even manifest personally. Their personality is all up in the absonite, you know. But slowly they start to bring some of that down into a finite manifestation. Yeah. You know? All right. So that's that. Just that transcendence is, you know, again, it's the big thing. That's what you how you can really understand their nature.
1, messengers of the Paradise Trinity. I am not permitted to reveal much of the work of the group of messengers assigned to the Trinity. They are the trusted and secret servants of the deities, and when entrusted with special messages which involve the unrevealed policies and future conduct of the gods, they have never been known to divulge a secret or betray the confidence reposed in their order. And all this is related in this connection, not to appear boastful of their perfection, but rather to point out that the deities can and do create perfect beings. The confusion and turmoil of Urantia do not signify that the Paradise rulers lack either interest or ability to manage affairs differently. The creators are possessed of full power to make Urantia a veritable paradise. But such an Eden would not contribute to the development of those strong, noble, and experienced characters which the gods are so surely forging out on your world between the anvils of necessity and the hammers of anguish. Your anxieties and sorrows, your trials and disappointments, are just as much a part of the divine plan on your sphere as are the exquisite perfection and infinite adaption of all things to their supreme purpose on the worlds of the central and perfect universe.
Okay, so he can't really tell us anything directly about this very paradise-rooted and tied to the, you know, no, it's who it's tied to. It's not the three persons. It's the Paradise Trinity, okay? But instead, the Divine Counselor uses this opportunity to bring it down to home. It's like you're probably getting a little bit lost up in the transcendent, you know, abstract stuff. How does the rubber meet the road here? Okay. And so, you know, he reminds us that you know, how silly it is to think that God is somehow disinterested or lacks the ability to do perfect things. No, God can do perfect things. That's not the point. In terms of a finite life like we're going to live for trillions of years, by fiat, perfect life, every single potential for that is already done. It's all taken. You know, that countless number of Ona natives and paradise citizens, there's an individual that fills every conceivable possibility of a finite life that starts out perfect. There's no opportunity left there. The only jobs left in the universe are ones that start out imperfect and perfect. Okay? And
right, so quit bitching about it.
And there's that harsh fact that pain and suffering are essential to progressive evolution. The only way to power a perfecting, to put the ing on it, so you're not just eternally imperfect, but you're going somewhere. What's the engine that powers that motion?
Tribulation.
It's that differential, you know, the voltage. You stick your finger between the voltage. It hurts. Pain and suffering are essential. Is a painful voltage differential that's driving evolution. Okay, you can't avoid it. And we've talked about, there's three times when they do the hammer anvil thing in the book. Okay, at what kind of steel, Agendonter steel, is being forged on this planet between the anvils and the hammers? Okay, and you got to take that on. You're not just any old steel. Those hammers are pounding down as hard as they ever pound on any world, because you're going to be a type of steel that is only made with those swift blows and repeated blows. Agendonter steel. Yeah. So.
Why so many blows? It doesn't have to be so many.
Culture is a lot different from older beliefs that.
Yeah.
If anything bad happens to you, you must not be in favor with God.
Yeah. Now, remember the first time we came across this, the anvil and the hammer, and after they said it, then they said, but the person that wields the hammer, are the daughters of the mother. It's like, well, okay, that's wonderful. They're, this is for your own good, sweetie. Bam! I love you. Bam! Here's a blanket. Bam! So they're the ministers of mercy. But they tell you point blank, they're the ones that wield the hammer and the hammers. Who builds the speed bumps? Who got ordered by the creative mother spirit to maximize sin expression? The angels. Yeah, she said, I'm going to give each of you two hammers because you have two hands. She handed out another set of hammers to every one of her angels so they could pound like this. You've seen blacksmiths that are, so they can pound nonstop. I want you to throw down your blanket, which you normally have in one hand, the salve, and I want you to fill that salve hand with a hammer, and I want you to pound on them.
Where does the mercy part come
from? You're going to need mercy later.
No amount of pounding by an angel can alter your relationship to eternity. There's infinite mercy in play, that no matter how hard you're pounded, you can choose to make it to eternity.
The greatest affliction is to
never be afflicted. Yeah.
Though you slay me.
Yeah, well, I serve him. Yeah, I mean, it's just like Joan was saying. You've seen me stress this over and over when it really comes to a point in the book. I mean, the fifth epical revelation is saying, are there any people of courage on your world? If you have courage, we've given you a revelation. If you have not courage, this is not for you. We are for the first time going to reveal directly that only those of courage make it to the aisle. And it's courage like you've never imagined. It's not just the kind of courage that survives a foxhole. Okay? It's the kind of courage that survives the hammers in angels' hands, some of whom also have trumpets even. Okay? And can bring on things like you can't imagine, if that's the kind of speed bump that's needed. A full-on 40-foot-high brick wall. Okay? This is the world we're born into, where pain and suffering are essential. Now, no amount of wishful thinking is going to make you a Havona native. You're not a Havona native. And all of the assumptions that people have been trying to live by, where they're assuming that fundamentally we're Havona natives, and there's been a fall from the Havona state. No, there has been no fall. Okay? Havona is still there, untouched. It didn't fall down into the super universes. Okay? We are not, we didn't begin in a golden age. We didn't fall. Okay. Yes, the central universe is the pattern universe. We are a projection of that. But the immediate actualization of that projection is at the end of the finite age. That's when you'll see this looking like Havona. It will be perfected and just as high a quality as the fiat initially perfect. Okay. But, you know, if you don't have the courage to handle this fact, find another revelation, like the fourth.
I have a question.
The fifth is for those who are ready to take on the full facts. It's not for the faint of heart. Jesus came to remind those faint flickers that they're fine, that God loves them absolutely, and all they have to do is just allow God to be present, and eternity is open to them. It's as simple as that. That's all there is to it. That's the fourth epical revelation. If you're a faint flicker of faith, this is the last thing that I should give you. There is nothing more wrong for me to give a faint flicker of faith than this book. This book is a giant hammer, okay, that will crush a faint flicker. And if I were to give this to a faint flicker, it would be better if a millstone were hanged about my neck and I were cast into the sea. We know that. This will crush a faint flicker. This is way too much. Okay? It's not just because it's got a lot of words. It's what the words are. Anvils, hammers, trumpets, etc. Okay? This is the cold, hard facts.
Yeah, it makes you want to go out and get in trouble.
Been there.
See, now I believe there's another sentence. Something about tempt not the angels of thy
wife. But you know, their concept here you just went over,
yeah,
which was is quite interesting. And that is the biggest question I ever get from anybody is, well, why, you know, if God's such a great, wonderful person, is in your angel book, right, why does he make us go through all this stuff?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's
right,
a hard question to answer for people, right, who aren't ready.
It's the oldest question in the book. How's it normally expressed? Why do bad things happen to good people? Right. So, oldest question in the book. This is the first answer from on high to that question. And it's like, well, I don't like that answer. Well, that's the answer, guys. I'm sorry, but that's the fact. You know, and you think about, you know, we could have been made perfect, but to take it to a, you know, to a precise logical recognition, like the square circle sort of thinking, the compossibility, remember, like up paper in 118? Remember when they talk about bringing the architects of the master universe into existence, and they describe it in a way that, so we can better understand. They say, you make all these master architects, and then they tried to make the one more, and it just wouldn't actualize. Okay? They made almost countless, from our perspective, number of Havona natives. They tried to make one more perfect creature, and it couldn't do it. Because every single one that can be made has been made. So another way of looking at what we are We are what happens when they tried to make more. They didn't immediately come into existence as perfect. They got this. They got spread out over time as a perfecting fact. And if you think of us as in parallel to Havona natives like that, then what does that say about something that might be parallel to architects of the master universe? There probably is something, an extension, but it couldn't come into existence by fiat like they did. There's probably something else that's spread out over a process that in the end is like them.
That's why God already sees you as a perfect being.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So technically, he couldn't make you perfect. He can't make a square circle. Every single perfect one was already made. And he tried to make one more. He tried to make countless more. But it didn't happen instantly. It didn't happen in eternity. It happens. Yeah. It didn't happen top down. It's happening bottom up. We are that phenomenon.
Oh, so someday we'll be talking to a Havana native trying to explain to them what an accident is.
Yeah. Well, it's like, no, I can't say that. Well, it's like, oh, this is like trying to explain color to a blind man.
All right,
it's going to be like that. Right, exactly. Yeah. All right, let's get some more. Oh, you still have a question?
Yeah. You were talking about the Golden Age, people living in the Golden Age.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really imagine how much affliction could be going on then. So how would their angels be doing this?
Oh, man, I think there was no Golden Age.
Well, there is light and life.
Yeah, but that's, you know, the Golden Age is a past notion, not a future notion.
Oh, well, that's what I'm talking about. Light
the Golden Age, quote unquote, you know, that's a known expression, the Golden Age. That refers to something in a rearview mirror.
Matthew Renshaw talks about it as light and life.
Right, but see, that's why they call it light and life. They don't call it the Golden Age. You know, I mean, so it's understood. There is such an idyllic thing, but it lies ahead, not behind.
Well, I'm talking about how it's talked about in the book.
Okay, and what happens when you get to the age of light and life? There's still differentials. It's just they're way transcendent of what we're fighting with now. The angel will be ministering mercy to you in the face of you sticking your finger between much, you know, higher differentials. You know, even in the next universe age, it's all powered by differentials. You're still going to be sticking your finger between the two poles of, you know, of a voltage. Okay, it's all driven. You know, there's an ing to everything. It's a universe of motion. Remember how that's one of the fundamental things about the revelation. There's nothing static except the Isle of Paradise. Everything else is in motion. It's like, well, if it's in motion, that means something is behind its motion. Something is driving it. You know? All right.
Two, messengers of the Havona circuits. Throughout the ascendant career, you will be vaguely but increasingly able to detect the presence of the solitary messengers, but not until you reach Havona will you recognize them unmistakably. The first of the messengers you will see face to face will be those of the Havona circuits. Solitary messengers enjoy special relations with the natives of the Havona worlds. These messengers, who are so functionally handicapped when associating with one another, can and do have a very close and personal communion with the Havona natives. But it is quite impossible to convey to human minds the supreme satisfactions consequent upon the contact of the minds of these divinely perfect beings with the spirits of such near transcendent personalities.
Okay, just one little thing there. You can see it's just sort of a passing reference, but they mentioned how close in creative relationship these solitary messengers are to the end of that creative cycle that started with the master spirits and ended with the circuit spirits. Do you remember when we read about the circuit spirits? They talked about how the circuit spirits and the Havona natives share a very intimate relationship, you know, not unlike in many ways the relationship we share to thought adjusters. Okay, so if you had to be suspicious of what the medium is for this intimate interaction, Where would be your first suspicion? The circuit spirits, right? Yeah, that the circuit spirits are bringing the solitary messengers and the Havona natives into an intimate contact that they could never have without that link, that bridge.
Are they somehow providing the mind?
Let's don't try to go into the data, but just it's going to be spiritual.
Okay.
The foundation in Havona's spirit, we talked about that a number of times. We talked about how spirit they are, not really mind, in many ways. So, right, it's going to be, the Havona natives are what kind of origin beings?
Trinity
origin. The solitary messengers are infinite spirit origin. Oh, that linkage coming together again, see? So you've brought that linkage on the top level between the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity into a downstepped expression here.
Sure.
See? And the circuit spirits are the medium for that.
And it's valuable because there's a differential.
Yep. And it's possible because of the circuit spirits. Let's see, I think there was something else in there, wasn't there? I won't mention it here, but when we get to the latter part of the paper, this whole bit about when you begin to engage the first circuit of Havona, you begin to have a relationship with some very transcendent facts that allow you to come into relationship, sort of face-to-face relationship with the solitary messengers, like they're describing. We'll see that at the end of the paper here, that they speak to that directly.
I'm glad you decided not to bring that up until the end.
We've got enough to think about right now. And it's out of context. So, yep.
Three messengers of the super universes. The Ancients of Days, those personalities of Trinity origin who preside over the destinies of the seven super universes, those trios of divine power and administrative wisdom, are bountifully supplied with solitary messengers. It is only through this order of messengers that the triune rulers of one super universe can directly and personally communicate with the rulers of another. Solitary messengers are the only available type of spirit intelligence, aside possibly from the inspired Trinity spirits, that can be dispatched from the headquarters of one super universe directly to the headquarters of another. All other personalities must make such excursions by way of Havona and the executive worlds of the master spirits.
Okay, and this is tied to the same physics that I was just alluding to that we're not going to talk about quite yet either. This same thing where, the normal thing where you've got to go into the central universe and then back out to another super universe. You can't go directly as the crow flies from one to the other. In order to go directly as a crow flies from one super universe to the other, you must be at a level where that's transcendent of the individuation of the seven super universes. You must be above the individual super universe level. You must be at the collective super universe level. When you look at the psychic circles in the sevenfold chart, and we talk about the mothers, the individual super universe level is there with the reflective mother spirits. You go up one notch to the collective super universe level. Creative mother agencies of the Ancients of Days. Okay, so when you get into unpacking some of these advanced details about the pattern that's coming from the central universe, this all starts to come together and make sense. What you're talking about, the kind of encompassing, the kind of womb, spiritual and mindal womb, that we're talking about these beings sort of functioning in relationship to the finite. They're pointing out it's way up there towards the ceiling. The next notch up is this, the universal mother, the supreme mother. Okay. I suppose I said the Mother Supreme. But, so it's way up towards the ceiling of the finite, quite transcendent. But not totally. So they don't travel at infinite speed, for instance, things like this. So again, it's this transcendent, but precisely how you describe that upper domain and its relationship to the first circuit of Avona. I'll mention that briefly when we get to the end of the paper.
So even the architects can't do this, can't go from one universe to the other.
Well, the architects, remember, they're fully transcendent. They're absonite beings. So, you know, we can't even understand what the heck they see. I mean, they see the absentite universe, right. You know, from our perspective, doesn't even exist yet. So, right. I mean, they you know, for instance, you know, if you're an architect that has a relationship to all four outer space levels, I mean, you see the full master universe.
Yeah, I guess my point is that so, what, you know, yeah. Even knowing you may be able to see another universe or stars in another universe, you know, when you develop that kind of technology, especially if you can see in the outer space, you could never get there. Now, no being in the seventh super universe can get to the sixth super universe, no matter who they are. It's for some reason or some, unless they go through Havona and then go back out again. Right?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, remember the in terms of that, if I imagine, you know, getting this a transwarp drive, you know, in the Enterprise so that I can really scream fast and I try to, you know, go from one galaxy to the next, go from the seventh super universe to the first super universe. What they're reminding you is it's not just a spiritual boundary of the master spirit, number seven and number one, that divides those two. There's seven supreme power directors that divide, and those are fundamentally the guys that are putting a wall down. Supreme power directors. Try to fly the Enterprise through them, through their hand. You're going to smash up against it. You're not going to get through. Okay. There's a power wall, not just a spiritual wall. Okay. So, yeah, you can't go through. And all these, all these lower beings, I mean, they're engaging the power circuits and stuff to, you know, to move. Yeah, to locomote, yeah. So if you're going to go, you got to be above the wall, above the hand of the supreme power directors in order to get to the other side. So, see, that's telling you something about their nature, see. Yeah, all right.
This says almost toward the end of that paragraph that aside from the inspired Trinity spirits,
right,
that the solitary messengers can go from headquarters of one super,
because they are above that wall. See, all other personalities must make. Yeah, they have to go in and back out. Can't go through the wall. You got to go in and get to the other side of the wall. Yeah,
you got to go up before you can get through.
Yeah, or however you want to think about it. Yeah, right. Yeah, because of course when you go in, you also go up. You know, so yeah. All right.
There are some kinds of information which cannot be obtained either by gravity messengers, reflectivity, or broadcast. And when the Ancients of Days would certainly know these things, they must dispatch a solitary messenger to the source of knowledge. Long before the presence of life on Urantia, the messenger now associated with me was assigned on a mission out of Uversa to the Central Universe, was absent from the roll calls of Orvantan for almost a million years, but returned in due time with the desired information.
Everyone loves that little tongue-in-cheek. And returned in due time. Remember we found a way to give a rough estimate of how ancient the Ancients of Days are.
Yeah.
You know, they've been the rulers of the super universes for how long? You remember the number we got?
300 trillion years.
So what's a million years? Right. I mean, that's the blink of an eye. So they're looking at managing things from that sort of time scale. So, I mean, a million years, you know, is a negligible thing in this, from the vantage point that they're looking. It's not like, well, that was totally, you know, it's totally too late now. I mean, I was working on something. I needed to know the answer in 500,000 years. No, they needed to know the answer before, you know, a trillion years or something. Right. Yeah, and they got it in a million. Yeah. So
time may take on different
Right, but that, see, and that's that, it's a very important, and they say that, that the relativity paragraph that you calculate that from, that it's, you know, they're not speaking in some sort of like special relativity terms. They're not speaking about physics there. They're speaking about perception. They're saying, you know, we think of a million years relative to 80, our lifespan. Okay, they're pointing out, think about what a million years would be like if your lifespan is 300 trillion.
Yeah. You don't even have a watch that's got
right, right. I mean, right. You know, the ticks on your watch don't even get that small. Okay, right, right, right. So it's not the little t in the physics equations sequence that special relativity talks about the relativity of an. You know, it's that sequentiality of progressing mind or perfecting spirit or harmonizing personality. It's that sequence that has a temporal perspective, a sequential perspective. Yeah.
There is no limitation upon the service of solitary messengers in the super universes. They may function as executioners of the high tribunals or as intelligent gatherers for the good of the realm. Of all the super creations, they most delight to serve in Orvantan because here the need is greatest, and the opportunities for heroic effort are greatly multiplied. In the more needy realms, we all enjoy the satisfaction of a more replete function.
So, if you don't like voltage, you pick the wrong super universe to be born into. Okay? You were looking for number one or something, okay?
We've got the 1 in 10 million... sphere where the sovereignty of the Master Son is consummated. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
A lot of voltage.
Welcome to Voltage Central.
Yeah.
Well, this is extremely unique. Yeah. Our experience level that we're going to gather and take on. Right. It's going to be phenomenally valuable.
Yeah. It'll be valuable. Right. Yeah.
I mean, and why would you despair and give up in the face of this challenge? Yeah. God has your back. There's fear
because
not.
You know that.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I'm just putting that out there. Know that. I have absolute confidence. Not finite confidence, not absentite confidence. You've got to know that absolutely, and that's what we're just stressing. If you don't know that absolutely, if you're a faint flicker of faith, you know...
Stick to the Jesus papers.
You know, and even that, you're going to find too much voltage in places. Okay? So...
You're looking for old-time religion.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
First shall be last, and last shall be first, something like that. I remember that.
You're opening again, Anna.
This reminds me of years ago when I was young, I had an experience that I thought was just god-awful. And I thought, probably in 5 years, I'll look back on this as being something, you know, useful or worthwhile. But right now, it's god-awful. And sure enough, 5 years later, I did look back on that as a very useful learning experience. I sure couldn't have seen it at the time I was going through it.
And the challenge is more and more in the present to go, wait a minute, what am I saying? It can't be god-awful. It's just... limited animal origin creature awful.
Okay, well, that's in the terms I understood.
Right. But see,
I was
just challenge yourself to break from those old passages. See, that we're falsely exalting it. You know, making mountains out of molehills. No, it's not god awful. I mean, that present moment, in a matter of fact, is the antithesis of awful. It's what? It's divine. Now is innately divine. Right. Now is a divine dispensation. Right. You know, it's God perfect, not God awful. But see, this is the challenge that Jesus even put in front of us. You know, he said, "Fear not." He said, "I have absolute confidence." I mean, he said those things. I mean, he's saying, you know, you can do this. You can consecrate yourself to this knowing. You can know that no real harm can befall you because it's not god-awful. If it was god-awful, real harm could befall you, but it's not. There is no edge. You cannot fall. God is the infinite upholder. There's no edge, there's no cracks.
In the face of, what do they say? Feast on uncertainty.
We always point to Chris when we want that.
Right.
It's just, you know, you cannot fall. You can only choose to not be held. That's it. Know that and never doubt it again. Turn.
You do have to make choices. Yeah. I mean, you know,
and that's the first choice you ought to make, to know that. You know? Choose to know that. And so that every decision is predicated on that. You make some decision about some specific thing, it harkens back to that choice that no real harm can befall you. Because you might need to make a decision one day to say yes to the sergeant that says, I need a volunteer for a suicide mission. That may be the decision that you are confronted with. If you can fall back on that choice, then you can make that decision. Mm-hmm. If you can't fall back on an absolutely transcendent choice like that, no. Courageous and independent cosmic thinking.
Chris,
yep.
One thing that came up in class recently, and it stays with me all the time now, is though you slay me, I will serve you.
Yeah.
And the crazier it gets, that's the only response that makes sense to me right now.
And
we're in such turmoil, I can't make sense of it.
And that's ancient wisdom. Long before there was an Old Testament, there was the story of Job. Even though he slay me, yet will I serve him. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the most powerful statements in the entire Bible. If you have the courage to take a hold of that statement, it's like, yeah, that's me. All right.
4, messengers of the local universes. In the services of a local universe, there is no limit upon the functioning of the solitary messengers. They are the faithful revealers of the motives and intent of the local universe Mother Spirit, although they are under the full jurisdiction of the reigning Master Sun. And this is true of all messengers operating in a local universe, whether they are traveling out directly from universe headquarters or whether they are acting temporarily in liaison with constellation fathers, system sovereigns, or planetary princes. Before the concentration of all power in the hands of a creator son at the time of his elevation as sovereign ruler of his universe, these messengers of the local universes function under the general direction of the Ancients of Days and are immediately responsible to their resident representative, the Union of Days.
Okay. So you see how they have this connection to the Ancients of Days, and you also see what we mentioned earlier, about that personal representation. You know, when the creative Mother Spirit isn't that self-personally manifesting yet, they are the faithful revealers of the motives and intent of the local universe Mother Spirit. Okay. Just like they reveal that personalization of the Infinite Spirit, they reveal that personalization of what's really just basically a creative spirit yet at the... You know, technically it may be a greater Mother Spirit, but experientially it's not. You can't experience it personally, in those early days. So, yeah. So here you see them there. They're little personalizations of that initially impersonal fact of the third source and center.
Okay, all right,
let's get the explorers here. All right.
5, explorers of undirected assignment. When the reserve corps of the solitary messengers is over-recruited, there issues from one of the 7 supreme power directors a call for exploration volunteers. And there is never a lack of volunteers, for they delight to be dispatched as free and untrammeled explorers to experience the thrill of finding the organizing nucleuses of new worlds and universes.
And it's pretty easy to be solitary out in the 4th outer space level.
Pretty untrammeled out there.
They go forth to investigate the clues furnished by the space contemplators of the realms. Undoubtedly, the paradise deities know of the existence of these undiscovered energy systems of space, but they never divulge such information. If the solitary messengers did not explore and chart these newly organizing energy centers, such phenomena would long remain unnoticed even by the intelligence of adjacent realms. Solitary messengers as a class are highly sensitive to gravity. Accordingly, they can sometimes detect the probable presence of very small dark planets, the very worlds which are best adapted to life experiments.
Okay, so just note that a little bit in passing. You know, back when we were talking about, you know, them figuring out how much material gravity and how much spirit gravity and mind gravity were functioning, we mentioned how one of the things they do is serve as a spirit test particle to try to, you know, to get a measurement of how much spirit gravity is functioning. But you see here, they're doing more than that too. They also, because they are so attuned to the gravity that they ride, and you need to be very sensitive to even the little details if you're moving at the kind of speeds they are. Okay, so they, you know, we're struggling trying to figure out how to build telescopes that are big enough that we might be able to detect an Earth-sized planet, you know, out of around some close star. See, I mean, they do that sort of thing too. Only they cheat. Instead of trying to build really big telescopes to do it, they just send out solitary messengers, and they can feel, you know, about 4 light years over there. As I was zipping by, I felt a little disturbance in the forest, quote unquote. See? You know, there's a little Earth-sized planet over there. You should go check that out.
Our Creator Son know everything that's going on in His universe, so to speak.
That's like that. That's one of the things that they're trying to point out. Not even the ancients of days. I mean, these solitary messengers are very indispensable. There is an exploration element,
even
to God.
Even in the seven super universes.
Yeah. It's not. I mean, obviously, one of the, you know, they're going out and figuring out what's going on in the outer part of the second outer space level, and you know, when they talk about they're beginning, those astronomers, universe astronomers, are beginning to sense the initial level motion in the third outer space level, even though there's not much, you know, really nothing out there yet. Yeah, I mean, these guys are involved in that. But even in here close, they have to go exploring. They don't build Enterprises and hop in. You know, especially the ancients of days, they can't move from Eversa. If they want to know what's going on, they got to send someone out to explore.
So you don't think the Mother Spirit inherently knows that in her own...
They just pointed out, there are beings that have a very high know-it-all perspective, but they don't talk.
The Mother Spirit doesn't talk to the Creator.
I mean, there's a lot of things that just aren't said. because, and why? It's like, well, that seems silly. Why wouldn't they just talk? No, because if those beings that have that big picture talk, they short-circuit the evolutionary process. It's part of the evolutionary process that you grope around in space, contend with the amount of time it takes, and evolve. That's the evolutionary process. You can't short-circuit that by having some transcendent being see it from the top and give you the answer.
Yeah. Even though the Creator's end may know the answer.
Even though.
But he must be in full communication with the Mother
Spirit. Right. They know these things. Yeah, they know these things. They're not talking. But I was stressing that, I mean, there are things that the Creator's sons don't know, that only the architects know. You know, and the Creator's son has to do a lot of things on faith. The architect says, stay between these lines. Okay, I have no idea why, but I trust you. I'll just stay between the lines. Because they don't have, you know, those, even though they're God, they don't have an absonite perspective on things like the architects do. So even God has to discover, has to explore. You know, those Creator sons are going forward in faith, exploring where this goes. And they're making discoveries like, oh my goodness, that's what happens, you know, yeah, just like us.
I think that makes it much more fun for them too.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons why he can say he's your brother, you know, when Michael is here as Jesus. He shares that at needing to explore and discover that we do. Mm-hmm. He's part of the finite evolutionary creation too.
Yeah. That's why we will go out with the creative Holy Spirit and the mm-hmm. the Michael.
Yeah, there's a commonality. There's a commonality there. Yeah. Yep. Let's see. We get everything there. I just wanted to really stress, because it's often lost in them thinking about them playing out in the outer space levels, that they're literally working in the super universes finding potentially inhabitable planets too. They're working on the details and the big picture stuff. So, all right.
You think that's how this planet got?
Who knows? I don't know. I mean, you just, you know.
And they sent the life carriers out of here.
I mean, you'll see, you know, when we get to the, you know, the next, the number six here, there's even more of this sort of discovering stuff going on. It's like, well, wow, they don't know that? It's interesting.
These messenger explorers of undirected assignment patrol the Master Universe. They are constantly out on exploring expeditions to the uncharted regions of all outer space. Very much of the information which we possess of transactions in the realms of outer space, we owe to the explorations of the solitary messengers as they often work and study with the celestial astronomers.
And just see, it says all outer space, including the fourth outer space level. So just remember, you know, you have four levels of ultimate personality activity. That's why there's four outer space levels. So for them to be able to, you know, not just go laterally around the super universe instead of having to go in and out radially, you know, if they can go out and explore those, that's because they're transcendent in some way of all that. Well, I mean, if you get all the way to the fourth outer space level and getting to light and life and developing it, you know, you're talking about completing the ultimate. Oh, my goodness. They have to have something that goes beyond ultimacy in order to be transcending all this. And that's like I said, you get into that in the latter part of the paper. There's a very high ceiling in their nature. At the same time, that they can come right down and write a paper for lumps of protoplasm like us. It's amazing, the breadth that they have here. Yeah, there's a real range here.
Six, ambassadors and emissaries of special assignment. Local universes situated within the same super universe customarily exchange ambassadors selected from their native orders of sonship. But to avoid delay, solitary messengers are frequently asked to go up as ambassadors from one local creation to another, to represent and interpret one realm to another. For example, when a newly inhabited realm is discovered, it may prove to be so remote in space that a long time will pass before an in-seraphim ambassador can reach this far distant universe. An in-seraphim being cannot possibly exceed the velocity of 558,840 Urantia miles in 1 second of your time. Massive stars, cross currents, and detours, as well as attraction tangents, will all tend to retard such speed so that on a long journey, the velocity will average about 550,000 miles per second. When it develops that it will require hundreds of years for a native ambassador to reach a far distant long local universe, a solitary messenger is often asked to proceed there immediately to act as ambassador ad interim. Solitary messengers can go in very short order, not independently of time and space as do the gravity messengers, but nearly so. They also serve in other circumstances as emissaries of special assignment.
Okay. And just before I did, I just remembered, back when they were giving us those first clues, you know, about this relationship to things that they have, I wanted to point out, let me think, it was way back in that first section where they said, for short periods and when stationary, they can collaborate in a group. But when thus ensembled, using it as a verb, they are altogether cut off from the sustenance and direction of their paradise circuit. The literal meaning of ensembled means at the same time. Okay, you have someone who's very much down there in time, and they're going to strike step with that synchronicity of motion, with that time sequence. To do that, they've got to drop down, like we were saying. You have to really come down into time to be at the same time, to be ensembled with others. Okay? But because they're normally very transcendent, they can go really fast. And, you know, we're going to talk about how fast in, you know, next time. But they're pointing out that three times the speed of light here, you know, that 558,840, that's three times the speed of light. That's not even remotely fast enough, okay? So, you know, let's think about, notice some of the little details in play here. First of all, a little passing reference. Customarily, you exchange ambassadors selected from the native orders of sonship. Okay, so did you ever wonder, can Melchizedek's and Verondadek's, who serve as those ambassadors, have you ever wondered, can they translate themselves? Can they transport themselves? Or do they need to be in seraphimed and transported? The answer is no. They need to be in seraphimed and transported. They can't transport themselves. So they can only get from point A to point B at three times the speed of light. Okay. So that's a little thing to remind yourself of. So like when Melchizedek's or receivers are coming to take over 200,000 years ago, they got from Gerizim to here at three times the speed of light. So if it took 5 years to get here, Gerizim is 15 light years away, for instance. Okay, those little details, see? And then notice that when a newly inhabited realm, a new local universe, when a new local universe is discovered, you're going, what? Well, we were groping around, and guess what? We found another local universe. It's like, well, didn't you get a memo about that or something? So you can see they're alluding that there's a lot of groping around and discovering, like we're familiar with, going on even at higher levels. And the key here about the distances, I'll just read it. It was back in, this is paper 15, isn't it? Paper 15. They mentioned that the local universes are in closer proximity as they approach Havona. The circuits are greater in number, and there is increased superimposition, layer upon layer. But farther out from the eternal center, there are fewer and fewer systems, layers, circuits, and universes. We talked about that when we read that. Remember, you've got the Milky Way galaxy, this disk, you know, and there's a side that's closer to the central universe, and then there's our side that's on the other, farther out here. And those dark gravity bodies have a huge material gravity, linear gravity influence besides their absolute gravity influence. And so you have a tidal distortion. And so as things go around, as they get in there, they tend to be squeezed and piled up. All these local universes have to kind of, you can't blend them together. They're kept separate. But they have to pile on top of each other and they get compressed. And okay, so everything is a lot closer when you're over there on the inside. But when it swings out here, it all spreads back out again. Okay? And so you could say, well, when they're saying they've got to use a solitary messenger because three times the speed of light is just prohibitive to get to this newly discovered, it's like, well, how far away are we talking? Well, you can do some quick little back of the envelope calculations about what the star density is out here in our local neighborhood. You know, they tell you how many stars are in the local system. You can get kind of a an average density, volume, for one star, an average volume. So you can get some rough back of the envelope calculations of if you assumed like it was a sphere, the local universe was a sphere, what its radius would be, and let's say you get a number like 1,200 light years. Or a radius for the whole local universe. Well, if I had two of those imaginary spheres, spherical local universes butted right up against each other, to get from one, if the capital's in the center of each, to get from one capital to another as an ambassador, I'd have to go 1,200 light years plus 1,200 light years. I'd have to go 2,400 light years at three times the speed of light. That'd take me 800 years. When it develops, that it will require hundreds of years. So, in other words, out here, even an adjoining local universe is probably too far away, let alone one that's, off in the distance. Things are so spread out on this side of the galaxy that even a neighboring one is going to take you hundreds of years to get to it.
Imagine how long it takes Michael to get to the conclaves on paradise.
Yeah, well, Michael, see, you know, transports himself, and he can scream. yeah, because, you know, he goes in, you know, gets the blessing of the Father and comes back out again and bestows the Spirit of Truth. Lickety-split. Okay, so, but...
And they're still rolling the rock.
right. Yeah, meanwhile, he's gone to paradise and back. Yeah, right. Yeah. But, see, so...
You remember when it said, and I think of paper 16, the beginning of it, or 16, 15, whatever it was, it said 985 billion years ago, the star students saw out here. Mm-hmm. And then it took 400 billion years before Michael showed up or something like that. Right. So I see what your point is that they began to create it. I guess the architects began to create it, but nobody really knew about it necessarily.
Right. I mean, this stuff starts out very, you know, like the Andromeda Nebula starts out as this little whirl outside of the Milky Way galaxy. You know, initially it's completely undetected, you know, unless you have someone out there exploring and they say, oh, guess what? I found a new world. There's no automatons in it yet, but it's someone, you know, a new world has gotten spun up. And, well, a trillion years from now, that'll be a new local universe. You know, that sort of thing, yeah. But I just wanted to point out, see, that, you know, this whole bit about it being a long ways away, that's, you know, if you're on the inside edge, you know, you're probably having to, you know, go a distance, you know, skip over several local universes to get to one of these that you just discovered to be this far away. But out here, that far away is next door. I mean, just remind yourself of how difficult it is to administer even the Milky Way galaxy-sized super universe. It's a big place. At three times the speed of light, it's an insanely big place. I mean, it's 500,000 light years across. At three times the speed of light, that takes a long time. Right? You know, I mean, if you didn't have beings that could go faster than three times the speed of light, I mean, it would be completely unmanageable. Even to get two adjoining local universes out here on the outside edge of the Milky Way, you know, in relationship to each other, would be just about unmanageable. Let alone, you know, five local universes over, it's a big, big place. That's what's between the lines of this. And a simple little calculation, see, of getting a rough estimate of how big, say, our local universe is out here, and this at this star density that we have in our environment, you know, it's a pretty big object at three times the speed of light. All right, so that's
these guys are, what, 4.5 million, is it?
Yeah, well, you're jumping the gun.
Sorry.
That's next time.
I get ticketed for that.
And the author of this, here, without jumping the gun, the author of this paper, a divine counselor, remember the divine counselor that wrote another paper, he said, it took me 109 days to go from Uversa out to Urantia. Well, that's 200,000 light years.
He's going fast.
109 days. Yeah, he's screaming. Okay? He goes about 1/7 the speed of a solitary messenger.
Yeah, right.
He's going pretty fast, too. Yeah.
It's manageable.
Yeah.
100 days. No wonder they don't
want to
bump into each other.
All right. All right, let's get to the last little bit here.
7, Revelators of Truth. The solitary messengers regard the assignment to reveal truth as the highest trust of their order, and they function ever and anon in this capacity. From the super universes to the individual planets of space, they are frequently attached to commissions which are sent to enlarge the revelation of truth to the worlds and systems.
And we know. I wrote 6 papers. Yep. Okay, so then, yeah, the next time we'll get into more of the fun stuff about the details of their travels. And then that last section, like I've been hinting to, gives you a little bit more specificity about just how transcendent they are and what that means. All right. If there isn't any other burning questions, I can't wait till next time. Let's take a moment here and reflect on it.